गणपति गुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नुतिभिः सीदसादनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः रूपं दृश्यं लोचनं दृक् तद्दृश्यं दृक्तुमानसं दृश्याधिवृतया साक्षी दृगेव न तु दृश्यते. So let's do some meditation on what Vidyaranya has been pointing out now. And sit comfortably. Take a few deep breaths, gathering your attention. Make sure the exhalation is very long, complete. Body is still, comfortable and relaxed. So Sri Vidyaranya has been focusing now on the meditation on the external world. Earlier we discussed on the internal. Now focusing on the external. So the external, it's about the viveka between Brahman and Jagat. Between Brahman as Sat, as pure existence, and between Jagat, the manifest world. Usually I'm looking at the modifications, Nama-rupa, names and forms, and disregarding the substance that's in and through everything, the Sat, or Satchidananda, manifest more apparently as Sat in the external world. So if we were to take the set of dishes, we have different types of dishes. We have the cups, the bowls, the saucers, the plates. They're different shapes, different sizes, like this. They have different utilities. Then if we take the cups, there will be different types. One is going to be just for water. The other one is going to be for drinking the hot drink, it'll have a handle on it. There'll be the small bowl to put some small appetizer in, the big bowl for the soup, the very big bowl for serving. So within each type also there'll be multiple kinds, differences between them. Still, they're all made out of one and the same clay. So there's difference between different types of the utensils. Differences within the same type of utensil, different variety. And then even in one utensil, you take the mug, one side has the handle, one side doesn't. The plate, it was made by hand, so this side is a little thicker than this side. This side has one design, the other side has another design. So within one piece of it also, you have variety. So from the perspective of the name and form of all these different utensils, you see differences, multiplicity. But now when I look from the perspective of clay, they're all the same clay. There's no difference in the substance. It could have all been one lump a little earlier. Now it might be manifesting as these different saucers, plates, cups. Tomorrow it can be broken down again, be made one lump or any other name and form, any other shape. So substantially nothing has changed. It's the same material the whole time. When they give the example of gold, but this exact same thing, the customer coming to the jewelry shop looks at the forms, but the owner of the shop, the goldsmith, looks just by the amount of gold, how pure the gold is. Somebody brings in an ornament and says, how valuable is this? They don't look at the form, they weigh the gold. So from the perspective of the goldsmith, it's gold. Doesn't matter what form it is. The customer, what is the form? What is the name we gave it? A ring or necklace or earring? So now when I look at the external world, everything is one presence. But that presence I break down into multiple names and forms. But the same substance is there in and through everything. There is the house, right? There is a tree. There is the sun. There is the cloud. There is, everything is. So first of all, it is, sat. It's present. First it is. Then my mind comes in and breaks it into different components. That cloud changes, becomes water. I call it rain. The rain is. Water goes into the stream. I say the stream is. The stream goes into the ocean, I say the ocean is. Always the same thing was there. So one presence, one sat, multiple manifestations, but it's the same material existence throughout. And actually, from my experience also, then, when I observe, then, I observe one presence. Then I break it down. This is presence as eyesight. This is presence as hearing. This is as taste. But one presence, then I break it down. This one I like, this one I don't like. I add my ideas onto it. This is mine, this isn't mine. First there's presence, then I add these things. First there's the presence. When I take my ideas aside, it's like a very flat, like you flatten the picture. That there's substance with maybe a little bit differences, and even those differences are so superficial that if I look deeper, it'll just be the presence, sat. So it's changing my vision from looking at the wave to looking at the water. Much of the differences are just from my own projection first, my own mind. Where I remove that, what's left is just some surface difference. That's much easier to discard and just say, yes, there's one presence in and through everything. When you break it down to one presence, where are you, the drik, the observer? Where have you gone? You're still there, but there's only presence. There isn't you and the presence of the pure existence, there's just the presence. There isn't I as presence and the external presence as presence. There's only presence, only sat. But the mind and the habits are so strong, they come and split it up very quickly before we notice it. Then I take all the differences the mind puts in as the reality. But then if I come back and observe quietly like this, it always was sat. Always is presence, always was, always will be. It's not that it became presence now. shanti shanti shanti. So this is a bit of the idea, how we can do our meditation, the viveka between Brahma and Jagat, Brahma and Sarga, the creation. And Vidyaranya here was breaking it also into a few different ways. First of all, he talked about directly between the Brahman and creation, as we did with Drik and Drishya. Right, this one he did in verse 27, I believe. Yasmin kastip kasmin chavastuni samadhir adya sanmatra namarupa pratakritihi. Any object that you experience, you go and you do the viveka between the substance, the presence that is, or sat, and the name and form. So anything you take, the name and form is just something temporary experience at this moment, where that every moment it's gone. Literally, we give a name and form to something, but that name and form is momentary. Literally, it's momentary because nothing in this world is stable that's there for more than a moment, meaning it's you can never say. So what do you mean that's a solid object? Right, I have the computer in front of me. Right, I have the headphones. I have my body. That's the problem. We take the body as something as stable. What do you mean stable? Every moment changing. People are concerned about the weight. The weight is different the same day. Weight any time, it's different. Right? There's nothing that is just a solid reality. Every moment changes. But the fact that it is, it's there is constant. So this is between the substance, the Brahman, and the material, and the name and form. And that name and form is, you know, without me breaking it down, because literally you can go closer and closer, break things down more. You go further, further away, you break them down different ways. What is the name? What is the form? You can always be debating or changing. But the one thing is the same. Earlier on, you talked about that there's asti bhati piram rupam nama, what is it? Nama rupam panchakam, amcha panchakam. There are five things any object is made out of. Satchidananda, and name and form. And name and form are, there's the experience of it and the mind go together. Two sides of the same coin, name and form. But those two are the superficial ones, just the very thin external layer. And then learning to look at it not from that perspective, but breaking down the boundaries between them, because the boundaries are, you know, are not, don't have too much depth in them like this. So this is one of the points that he was giving. He said this is the first type of, just like internal, drik drishya. Here it's between name, form, and the substance, like this. So this is the first one that he talked about. Then the second one in the next verse, right, he said like this, I'm in the wrong place. He said here, akanda ekarasam vastu sachidananda lakshanam iti avachina chinteyam samadhihi madhyamaha bhavet. So the second one, which is using the shabda, using the words that are pointers that we use in the Shruti, in the Upanishad, using them in order to contemplate on this. Last week we explained that, similar to what we talked about in the meditation now, there are differences then between, there are different types of differences when we separate things. And we said one type is going to be called vijatiya bheda, between two different types of things. So when we were talking, the example we gave of the set of cups and plates, etc. You have a cup and you have a plate and bowl. They're different things. So they're differences because they're different. Here, because there's a tree and, you know, there's a house, there's a cow, there's a dog, there's a person. They're different, you know, different categories. So then each one is different because a table isn't a chair. The climber isn't a tree. The cow isn't a horse, like this. So then they're different. So that's one type of difference we see. Second type of difference we see is within the same species, they're different categories, right? If you take, you know, dogs, you have so many different kinds. You have the German Shepherd and Dachshund, and this is a mutt. It's a mixture between them, like this. If you have people, right, this one is a toddler, this one is a teenager, this one is an old person, like this. You can find all different categories, differences within one group, within one species as well. Then the third difference is swagata bheda. Swagata bheda is within oneself, within one object. So we said the mug has the handle on one side, not on the other. The plate has a design. It's different on this side or that side. So within it, differences. I look at myself. I have left and right, right? My right hand is stronger. My left foot is better for base. You kick with the right foot. That means the left foot is the supporting one. You can balance on it better. So you have different parts. So within one thing itself, also there are differences. So then, when he talks about using the shabda, the word pointers from the Upanishad, he says, akanda ekarasam. So akanda is continuous, unbroken. So the presence, Brahman, one. So meaning, first of all, it's one all-encompassing. There isn't a second one. It's like space. If you have space, or there are two spaces, and you'll say there's the space on the right and the space on the left. Kind of like we say there's Atlantic Ocean and there's Pacific Ocean. Now the Atlantic Ocean is going to say, oh, I'm so sad the Pacific Ocean is the biggest one. Why am I smaller? But really, are the two oceans. There's the one ocean there. It's just the human mind has made it two oceans to put on the map, and for whatever other reasons it was made like this. You know, there might be some differences you can see, but in general, it's one water. You can't really, there's not a line demarcating that if you go from one, oh, I'm swimming. Oh, you know what? It's so much warmer. Oh, yeah, because I passed the line from Atlantic to Pacific. Now that's what, it's not going to happen like that. The fish is going to have to go through, you know, they're going to say, no, you don't have a visa. You're not allowed to cross here. You're a Pacific fish. You have to stay on that side. You're not allowed to come here. That doesn't happen. It's one continuous thing. So one continuous thing, one space. So that's akanda, unbroken. So that means there isn't another species that you can say there's this Brahman, that one. So you can't separate like this, one presence. Now, another thing is, within one species, there are different kinds, as we said, like this. But the thing is, when you have one of a kind, how are you going to have many of them? So then when you say, okay, one space, can you compare it to something different? Well, you can compare space to liquid, you can compare it to other things. You'll say, well, there's Brahman and there's world. Then you'll say they're multiple. So now, there's you now. You go to sleep and there's you in the dream, your character in the dream, and somebody else in the dream, and the world of the dream. So you're one. And then you go to the dream. Now there are many things. Are there really many there? There aren't many different objects. There's only you there. You're in and through everything in the dream. It's just you, right? You live your dream. Every night we get to live our dream. People say, I never get to live my dream this well. You get to live your dream so much of the time. What do you mean? Vedanta will say, you're living your dream all the time. Wake up. Here you're also living your dream. But in any case, so what happens here is, so it isn't multiple things. Actually, Vedanta, if you look into the creation and science is on board on this to some extent, there isn't space and objects. They say objects are condensed space in some way. And that's exactly along the lines of Vedanta. But then what is space? So its space is also, it's from the same clay. It's also material. It's also, they also know it's material, the scientists, but it's also the same Brahman, one presence in everything. So it's not there's Brahman and Jagat. There's not God and world, but world is manifestation. That the dream is your manifestation. You're there. Here it's manifestation, the same one consciousness. So that's why there aren't other species, not Brahman and. we say atma anatma viveka. So at first we're saying there are two things, dhrik drishya. It starts with that, dhrik drishya. But slowly, you know, when you go a little further, the drishya becomes, you see, it's mithya. It doesn't have its own substance. Without the drik, it's not there. Without you, can there be a dream? No. The dream is based on you. Without you, it's not there. So without the substance of the world, it's not there. The substance doesn't get hurt. Whether world is manifest or not, same substance is there. Just like the rope, whether you see a snake or not, it's the same rope, never changed. So it never changed, it just seems to. So at first there's the viveka, two things, and one of them eventually just drops out because it's mithya, it doesn't have its own substance, insubstantial. So this is how these pointers point it out, and slowly as you go more and more into it, the other differences like this one are going to, they'll drop, because there isn't. So that's when he says akanda, unbroken. Then he says ekarasam homogenous. So homogenous, like again, if you take space, is this, I have two cubes filled with space. The space on this side is a little bit heavier than the space on that side. The space on this side is naughtier than the space on that side. Does that make sense? The same space. There's no difference in the space. One continuous space. There's no difference in the space anywhere. So it's not like the plate that you can have differences. The person that has one arm on this side, one arm on this side, feet below, head above, like this. One thing. So it's also within itself, within Brahman, you don't have differences, changes. If you had, then it changes, meaning it's not, can't be the absolute. There has to be something else supporting it. It's changing compared to what? There's something else there. So this is what happens like this, is akanda ekarasam, just as some examples within this. So this way we take these as pointers for the mind, so the mind doesn't, it's really not for finding something new, as we said, but the mind is holding on to things and it's slowly, slowly breaking those down. It's negating differences, not adding something new. And the thing is, the mind can't grasp it, but the mind slowly has to let go and accept it's not going to grasp. It's just it's just the one presence that they're finished. Because the mind wants to grasp. In order to grasp, it has to break it down, has to give it names and forms. But the thing is, you give it the names and forms, and then it doesn't help. So there's stepping stones. There can be some ideas in order to point to this at first, but then slowly what happens is this is really helping to negate those points. It's not bringing something new, adding something new to them. So this is what we discussed up till now. He continues here afterwards in the next verse where he has to explain the third. Right, the third meditation for the external, because we have three internal, three external. Stabdhi bhavo rasa swadat. Is that correct? Stabdhi bhavo rasa swadat atritiya purvavanmataha etai samadhi bishadbihi nayet kalam nirantaram. A steady abidance of the mind due to the absorption in Brahman, the true nature of oneself, as told previously in the case of internal Nirvikalpa Samadhi, is regarded as the third type of external Samadhi. One should constantly spend time in the practice of these six types of Samadhi. So, what happens? What is the external one? Just like in the internal, after contemplating on, at some of the time, one might just be absorbed in, okay, internally, that we said, that I see that I'm, that I'm the drik, the drishyam, the difference between the two. Slowly I get more and more absorbed, that I'm the pure awareness. When I'm more absorbed and I can drop, I don't need something in order to keep me there. So I'm just absorbed, I can stay in that, I'm presence. It's the same with external. I look more and more into the one presence behind, through just the different, taking anything and seeing there's name and form and there's the sat, and dropping the name and form, or through these pointers that are helping the mind to contemplate on and think about, then eventually the more one looks into them, one can be absorbed and drop all the things. We said like the pole vaulting. You need the pole to push yourself, but at some point you can let go of it and just be absorbed in it. So this is also with external. There's one presence in everything. You don't need to do anything. You're just absorbed in it. Now, as we also mentioned, the goal is not this absorption. Like yoga, goal is the samadhi. But that's, as here he doesn't discuss it as much. In Panchadashi, which we're doing Thursdays, very soon he will discuss it. To show samadhi, even that, it has to do with the mind, not with consciousness. Because consciousness is always the same. How can it have to do with consciousness? So this point is important thing. It's not that that's a goal. These are practices to do, contemplations to do. And then if one is absorbed in it, good, just be absorbed in it. If not, no problem. You can keep the attention pointed at it. Because the goal here is to the self-knowledge. It's not something there in a specific state like this. As very nicely said by some Mahatmas, Vedanta isn't for freedom of I, but freedom from I. We have the external freedoms that I do what I like, what I want. I don't, you know, not be restricted by people and things and this. So that's fine. But that's freedom for I. But that I is also some sort of idea that I'm imposing on myself. So freedom from I, freedom from these ideas. So then it's that understanding, the clear discrimination, then it solves the issues. It's not that I have to be absorbed, it have to be in a specific state of mind like this, meaning have to be in this samadhi. And also one reason to explain it is to understand that's not the goal, because some people have some experience like that. They want to try to repeat it. They think they have to repeat it and go deeper into it. So they're going after the experiential side, state of mind, instead of in what is the essence, what is it that I'm really looking for, like this. So in order not to have confusion. Swami Dayananji would say about this, that somebody is an ignorant person with a disturbed, noisy mind. Another person will be an ignorant person with a quiet mind, like this, just in order to point out that it doesn't do. Again, learning to quiet the mind, to be more present, this is very helpful. It's not that I shouldn't do anything like that, but it's a tool. It's not something that's the end of everything, or that I have to be perfect in it. Just the mind shouldn't be too, if the mind is too distracted, it'll be harder to apply it to these things. So that's why a mind that can be more present to be applied is helpful. But that's, you know, that's having a more, you know, a good pen in your hand, but it's not the writing, like this. So in this way, he says, this is this sixth one, how we should do it, like this. Mm. And what happens, one interesting thing is, they say like this, the devotee from Bhakti Yoga trying to see the God in and through everything. This is actually very similar to the external meditation that we do. See Ishvara in and through everything. That's pretty much the same thing. The one in through everything. But then, from Bhakti Yoga like that, what about inside? That one is not looked into as much. The yogi, Raja Yogi, isn't looking at the external, learning quiet the mind inside. See inside like this. But here is saying you have to do both. The viveka has to be done inside and outside, both of them. Because we have both of those. One of them I identify as this body-mind complex. So the driktisya viveka, the internal thing to help to break down that identification. Another thing is I see this whole world as some solid reality. That's the second one. So the external one helps to break that down. So that's why he's saying do these, and both are important, because if you just one and not the other is not going to totally solve everything. Okay, the God is in and through everything, but poor me. So I have to be the God servant, and I'm going to always pray that the God will help me if I don't have the internal viveka. I'm going to psychological dependence on God is good, but it's, you know, high school. It's not graduate school like this. So it can be a good stepping stone to get not have the world control me as much. But then what about, you know, it doesn't give the moksha like this. So this is why both of them are important to look at. This is some of the points he's giving. And he says, etaihi, samadhi pihi, right? Shad pihi, nayet, kalam, nirantaram. This is what you should be engaged in all the time. So, of course, this is something that, you know, according, we're not remembering it every moment, but something we should regularly be looking into. And these six really cover everything in the end, because they cover both different tools and step by step, and both internal and external. You take these and keep contemplating on them. It really helps like this too, slowly break down these differences and help bring clarity. So this recommendation he gives is very, very useful, extremely useful. This is what we can use for our nididhyasana, like that. So this is what he's recommending here. He continues then in the next verse here. Deha bhimane galite vijnate paramatmani yatra yatra mano yati tatra tatra samadhayah. When the identification with the body disappears and Brahman is clearly known, then wherever the mind goes, samadhis occur there effortlessly. So once the mind is retrained, then it doesn't make as much a difference. What happens is, wherever I go, I bring my ideas and put them on top of things like this. Because anything I look at, I'm looking and I'm putting my ideas on top. So this is like the soap to clear those ideas so they're not holding on to. So it seems like, okay, I'm looking at it in a new way, but I'm looking in a way to break down the things I'm superimposing on the world. That's really what it's for, to break that down. So once it's broken down, what difference does it make what I look at? It's the same thing. Is that it's going to be, I'm going to look at this in the same way at everything. So then equal vision, like this. So at first, some effort is needed to change how I look at. There's in the Raja Yoga, we have the Pratipaksha Bhavana, to change my angle of vision consciously. So if there's some body maybe that when I interact with it upsets me in one way or the other. So I find ways to think differently. That person is just, the God put them there to help to teach me patience. So thank you. So very good. Thank you. You're my teacher. Help me teach patience. Or, you know, that person is disturbed because they must have some problems, so it's coming out that way. So I feel compassion to that person. So whenever they're doing upsetting things, I'll feel compassion because they're suffering, so it's coming out of them. Things like this, I change how I look at. And then if I keep doing that consciously, then slowly it'll make a difference. And then slowly it'll change my vision, where if I keep doing it, eventually my mind will change that I will see that person in a different light. And the old way of thinking won't be there because this will become more, this will become more established in the mind. So this is a similar thing, similar process like this, breaking it down, but seeing from this angle in this way, where it totally helping to clear. One thing about this is that the Pratipaksha Bhavana are very helpful. Pratipaksha Bhavana, I'm still working with my samskara. This helps it totally go beyond it, we can say. We'll discuss a little bit more at the end of the class like this. But in any case, so this is, by doing anything regularly, the mind gets more adept at it, becomes more natural for the mind. This is really the bottom line. So something like this that's done regularly, then it will become more and more, part and parcel of how I think, how the mind is. This is what happens. Second, I lost you guys on the screen there a moment, like this. So let's see any other important points here. So what happens, deha abhimani galite, deha abhimana, the identification with the body, then what happens as long as I identify as the individual body, then still that's one separation, me and everything else. So this is, I is only this much, right? Like the dream, I keep that up. That's why I need the deep sleep in order to get a break from it. If you don't have a break from being the individual, you go crazy. So because, you know, being forced, you know, just like people being locked in a room that they can't take it, they, you know, that's why they have for prisoners, they have the threat. You're not going to behave. We have solitary confinement. So here, I don't want to. So I need a break from it here. So my break is my deep sleep, like this. So, because, and because then I don't see that difference at all. And this is an important thing in Viva, in our vichara. Deep sleep, there's no differences. I don't feel any differences, anything. Meaning, I can exist without the differences. So the differences are not innate to my nature, to my experience. It's something that I have created like this. And here, within the physical world, the difference is in the body. Imagine no body. Then where's your difference? Where are you different from everything else? In this way. So that's why I said, when you keep looking into this, the drikdrishya viveka, you see you're not the body. If you're not the body, then where's the, you know, the wave already knows it's not a separate thing from everything else. What's the problem then? And vijnate paramatmani, and then one also has a knowledge of there's no world, there's just the Brahman present. So both knows inner and outer. Different discards difference that I'm this limited one, discards the differences externally. Then yatratra manahayati, wherever the mind goes, tatra tatra samadhi, there it's just the same. This one is naturally there. Sahaja samadhi, it's just natural. Because the idea of separation is understood to be part of the mithya, part of just the superimposition, that it's not really a substantial difference, just an experiential one. An experiential one, then. We know experience is just some limited snapshot. It's not what's really behind the things like this. The clay is always there, like this. So this is what he's pointing out here. Let's see if any other important points here. So one point that's given here in the commentaries, which is nice about it, is still, if somebody knows that they're not this limited thing, limited identity, still they're doing things in the world. It's not that somebody knows and then, you know, the body just drops and goes away. It may happen, but in general, it doesn't have to happen. So, but there's no question about it. So what this would look like, an example they would give, is if you're taking a train ride. Here, usually a train ride, you know, you're sitting in the chair and you're not getting off the train, whatever. But if you go to India where you take a train ride, and it takes 2 days to go from one place to the other, they say like this on the trains in India. They say that one day somebody was at the train station and they announced this one train is coming, the 4:35 train, and it was 4:35 it was arriving. And they said, wow, this is a miracle. The train has come on time. I've never heard of a train coming here on time before. And the other person says, no, it's not like that. This is yesterday's train. So the trains can never be on time there. But if you go to Japan, if the train is 30 seconds late, they say, oh, sorry, we're late. And like they take in the Shinkansen, the speed train, they say like in the whole year, like the accumulated, you know, was like few minutes late was the accumulated late time, whatever. It's a crazy thing. But in any case, so if you're on the train ride, a two-day train ride, you're going from, you know, you're going from to Delhi from way in the south, from Trivandrum. So you're going like this. So when you're on the train, You know where you're going. You're going to sleep. You're going to chat with other people. People come and go. You'll get off the train and have a tea and look at some of the books there and get a snack. And then, you know, and then you'll keep your eye on the train to make sure to get back before it starts moving like this. You know, these are the good old days and good new days once this pandemic goes away. So what happens then is the whole time, though, your attention is you're going to Delhi. That's you're going. Although other things are happening around, that's just the side things. But it's not the main point. So in this way, one like this knows this is, okay, these things appearing, coming and going, but it's not the essential thing. So okay, let them come and go, enjoy them and do whatever vyavahara things I have to do. But those aren't the essence. Because if you think about it, if not, then I'm caught up in vyavahara, in the changing, transactional world. Meaning, transactions I have to do, and I have to do my duty, but that then can overpower me. I get caught up in that I'm doing well, I'm not doing well. I like this, I don't like this. Why are things like this and why not like that? Endless. And that then, the samsara comes from that. Where when one knows that, just by having a focus of destination, meaning I've mumukshutvam, I have a desire for liberation, so I'm focused in that. Already that will, most of the comings, the things coming and going in my life are not going to push me here and there very much because I have my goal, that's the thing. Just like a student who's studying to be a doctor, let's say, they're working very hard, they're, you know, studying very hard, then residency, residency sounds like the hardest training in this universe to me, but from stories I hear. But the thing is, their focus isn't, you know, I'm in so much debt because I'm doing it, I have to work so hard, this. Their focus, I'm going to become a doctor. I'm going to get that certificate, then I will serve with it or, you know, get a job with it, whatever it is that they're going to do with it after. But that's the focus. So the things don't disturb as much. So just being a mumukshu or jignyasu in this case, mumukshu, desire of liberation, jignyasu, desire of knowing. Because mumukshu at first I want to be, but jignyasu I know I want to know. This is what's going to free me by the knowledge. Just by that focus already makes a lot of the other difficulties fall to the side because they become secondary, not as important. But then the jnani for them, it all is just, they won't even come and disturb because they understand it for what it is. That, you know, okay, these things will come and go, but I'm still, that's where I'm going, done. That's what I am, done, like this. So this is what happens when, this is talking about the jnana palam, the, what is the result? Why do I want this knowledge? What good is it? Well, then it frees we want to be freed from samsara, we want to be freed from the mental anguish I have. And this is explaining how this happens to some extent. He continues along the same line in 31 here. Vidyate hridaya granti chidyante sarva samshayaha kshiyante chasya karmani tasmin drishte paravare. When the identity between paramatma and jivatma is clearly known, the knots in one's heart are destroyed, all doubts are dispelled, and the results of actions are eliminated. So once one knows tasmin drishte paravare, paravare, one knows the para and avara, higher and lower, meaning the absolute Brahman, one presence, and also knows the lower Brahman, Brahman as the world, because the world is manifestation, the same Brahman, it's not something different. So one sees it's one and the same presence, whether in the nidavikalpa state, that there's just presence, nothing else there, or when other things are there, knows it's that same presence, the same one. One Ishwara in and through everything, one presence in and through everything. So one then, when one knows that, like this, then the knot in the heart, and the knot in the heart is the avidya. And the avidya, knot is two things tied together, right? So two things have to be tied. Here, the consciousness and the some sort of the reflecting medium are kind of tied together. The jhara, meaning the insentient, and the chaitanya, the conscious sentiency, are tied together. And then something else is born there from them tied together, the knot. And that knot is I'm the knot, meaning small I, the identity. Chidabhasa, remember, reflection in the mind. That being a conscious entity is the knot. It's a confusion of two things. What is the knot? Confusion of the two. Confusion of the two, so it seems to be a conscious being. The individual seemingly, but the consciousness isn't in it, the individual. All the koshas, all the parts of them we saw, they're jara. They're not conscious. But I confuse, I give some of the limited aspects of their jara, mind, body, etc. I take some of the part, I take that limitation and I add to it the consciousness as though it is conscious on its own, as though it owns the consciousness. And those together, mixed up together, create this knot, and that knot is the ahankara, the identity as individual, and all the samsara problems are from there. So then by knowing that it's the one presence, then this knot is broken, and it's not broken by that I untied a knot and actually put something here on this side and this side, but like the rope and the snake. It's clear there was never two things, there was only rope. So that's why they just drop away like this. This is other thing that happens. So tasmin drishte paravare, when one sees that there's just the one presence, bidyate hridayam grantihi, then one sees that this knot is automatically broken. Chidyante sarvasamshayaha, then all doubts are gone. Now I have some doubts about, is it like this? Is it real? How is it? No question about. Once you have, like Hastamalaka Acharya, the disciple of Adiguru Shankara, just like you have the berry in the hand, no doubt that there's the berry in your hand. When there's no doubt, there's the consciousness. Where we have some ideas, now more, now less, but no doubt. Just like in the Tattvabodha, it says, just like I know I'm this person, I'm this individual, that same way I'm this person, I'm man or I'm a woman, right? I'm from this place, this is my name, this is my family. I have no question or doubt, they say the Jivanmukta, same way, says I'm the consciousness. They have that same exact conviction, so there's no doubt in that, like this. And kshiyante cha asya karmani, and also all the karmas are gone. So from our perspective, there's an individual there as the Jivanmukta. We understand the agami karma, no new karmas are created because there's no doership left to create karmas. Sanchita, all the potential ones for future birth, are not going to be claimed by this person when they die, because it's like the seeds that have been fried. They're not going to sprout anymore. They can't. So there's no potential for new. Prarabdha still has to play out. That's not going to... So prarabdha still goes through. This also, Tattvabodha explains it in more detail. So from our perspective, yes, look, that one still has prarabdha. But from the Mahatma's perspective, prarabdha isn't theirs. They're not the individual, so how can prarabdha be theirs? So even though that karma, from our perspective, has not been exhausted, from that perspective, it's exhausted because it's just mithya, just an apparition from their perspective, like this. So this is how these are the results, karma pala, jnana palam, from this knowledge. The different results are there, both to explain them in partially, and also it's in order for us to want, that's what we're looking for. This is what we're looking for. It says that's where you'll find it. You're not going to find it in the supermarket. You're not going to find it on Amazon. You're not going to find it in Google. You can only find it in iPhone, in I. So you can only find it there. Who's behind the I? In the in the eye of the eye, the eye of the eye. This is in the Kendo Upanishad. One day we get to like this. So this one, in this verse actually, he concludes the Didikta Viveka thing. He concludes this whole part like this. And afterwards, the rest of the text, he's giving the same thing, but giving slight different way to look at it, that's all. But he's not, but here, because he did go through the whole explanation, gave us how to meditate on it too. So he really pointed everything out. So from next week when we go into these other points, then it's going to be a few weeks where we're just looking at afresh from slightly different angle to help to explain it like this. This is where he's at with this. And one other nice point here is that it's used as seeing, right? Tasmin drishte paravare. Then one sees, there's just the one presence, right? Drishya viveka, seeing. The reason he used this is we say, right, seeing is believing. I see then, yes. I'm not sure. You tell me there's something. I'm not sure. When I go and see, yes. Okay, I believe. So yeah, that's why seeing is used, because meaning I have direct knowledge. I know myself. I have no question about. So this aparoksha anubhava, direct experience. We'll elaborate more on this in the week or two to come, aparoksha anubhava, the direct experience, what it means here. But in general, that's why we're saying seeing, because directly know, no question about it. So in order not to open that whole direct knowledge now, because it'll take a little bit more to talk about, but to understand that's what he's pointing out, and either next week or the week after, then we'll, you know, explain that a little bit further. Okay, so let's stop here for now. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. One question that I had, I just want to touch on a little bit by email. When I sent out an email about last email I sent about different classes and things, then somebody had asked about, well, more about soaring above, said like this. Actually, we're going to have a retreat day. I'll send out an email now in the next few days where we'll talk about it even more. But with that, how does this help with that? So when soaring above, there's two different things you can see about that, soaring above the issues or whatever I feel I'm caught in. One of them is pratipaksha bhavana, what we mentioned about rajyoga, seeing things differently. So positive thinking is one of those ways, to learn to look at things in a different way. And that one helps because my mind is full of samskaras, different ways of thinking. And when I consciously put another way of thinking and keep putting it in, keep reflecting it that way, slowly I change how I look at things. So one way is changing the samskara like that in the mind, which is very helpful for dealing with things in my life like this. So that's one thing that you can do. Now, that is a wonderful, very helpful tool, very important, but still it's dealing with the mind. So it's making the mind a place where it's easier to look into things, and one should do these things for sure. It's not that one shouldn't. But still it doesn't go to the root of the problem. It can help weed out a lot of negativities in the mind or things that disturb me and learn to transcend them, yes. But still, it's part of the tree, you can say. The tree is a healthier tree, but it's still a tree. Where here the tree is cut down asunder. Gita talks about by the viveka as the sword that cuts down the tree of samsara. So Vedanta helps even more so by going to the root, unroot it completely. Now, one thing, though, is it won't get unrooted completely all at once. It takes time for these things to sink in. It takes time for me to look at it. It's not something all at once. So, but the thing is, Vedanta, because it's going into it, if you keep looking into, you slowly can see differences, even though I haven't reached the bottom. It'll loosen things up to a certain extent. And one thing is like this. The way to see it, just like anything you were to try, you try sincerely, you take what's being taught, you take notes, you reflect on it, you ask questions about it, you meditate on the way we're doing, do it sincerely for 6 months, for 1 year, regularly. Do that. Then look and see, what differences did it make, right? And then what'll happen is, if the conclusion is it hasn't really done much, okay, it doesn't, so... But then you can really see it does help to loosen, does help, because this is really for not just for soaring above, but for transcending. The positive thinking helps to soar above. This helps to transcend, like this. This is the idea, the difference between the two. You can see, you know, the gray, you know, okay, this is how much is positive thinking, where does it come into, where, when does it become Vedanta? When does Vedanta just, you know, go not quite as far, but positive thinking? You can start being nitpicky like this, but in general, this is what happens is, that's why both are useful. One is more topical and really helps, but if you go more deeper in this, the other parts, what you get from the positive thinking will come anyway, because it helped to clear a lot of the stuff like this. So this is a few words on it. Our retreat day will have some more, and we can discuss this more if people are interested, you know, maybe end of next class, just that our time is pretty much gone. So, because we need a little break before the yoga class, like that. So that's how it helps. And again, you see, you do it, you see it's helping, and you have to be activated. You have questions about problems with what he's saying this. It's your mind, you have to look into it. You know, what is it saying? You ask about. Don't be shy to ask. No questions are you know, silly question. In the class like this, if there's not time, email or any other way, I can always find time to discuss if you want anything. And like this, so that, because it's for, you know, for you to know, not for, you know, the notebook or something like this. Okay, so that's a few points on. Again, if I didn't cover enough, feel free to, we can talk more about it, or you can ask me anything. Very good. So keep well, very good to see all of you. And we'll see you again now, yoga class, or those not in yoga, then the next week. Next week you'll need the key 108 to get into the class. Without the key, you'll be left out. So so you type in the code, then I'll send. There'll be an email saying, use the code 108 to get into Vedanta. Okay. Very good. Keep well. We'll see you next time. Home.